الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين وعلى آله وأصحابه أجمعين. فقد قال الله سبحانه وتعالى: فأعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، ادعو إلى سبيل ربك بالحكمة والموعظة الحسنة إلى آخر الآية. I've been invited today to talk to this lovely audience about the issue of Islamophobia. And it's obviously a very significant topic, a very extensive one. So without going into too many details, I'd like to just focus on one or two issues of concern to myself personally, and by extension, most Muslims who live in this part of the world. Obviously, to introduce a subject, it may be worthwhile to define Islamophobia, and I think we would except suggesting that Islamophobia refers to the type of unfounded fear and hostility towards Islam. Such fear and hostility leads to discrimination against Muslims, to exclusion of Muslims from mainstream political or social processes, for example. It leads to stereotyping. It leads to the presumption of guilt by association. And finally, it tends to lead to hate crimes. And in this modern 21st century, all of these evils are unfortunately quite present, and in some quarters, unfortunately, more so tolerated. So while the modern world has made tremendous progress in many respects, insofar as racial harmony is concerned, there is still a long road ahead for all of us to reach our destination, when all people are judged on the content of their character, and not on the color of their skin, or for that matter, on the religious allegiance they may have. So, Islamophobia is a term and a phenomenon that has gained currency in part due to the popular thesis developed by Francis Fukuyama and Samuel Huntington that argued about an impending clash of civilization between Islam and the West. And then when 9/11 occurred, the people already predisposed to viewing Islam with suspicion jumped on this bandwagon, and through a multitude of primarily right-wing outlets have been successful in creating a climate of extreme prejudice, of extreme suspicion and fear against Muslims. Islamophobia is by no means a new phenomenon. Rather, it goes back to the earliest period of Islamic history. There was a massive storm of anti-Muslim hatred that emerged and spread across large parts of the then Christian world with the expansion of Muslim political rule from the early 8th century onwards. And it was this that in large measure propelled the Crusades, which played a major role in propagating and unfortunately perpetuating deeply held negative stereotypes about Islam and Muslims within the Western world. Contemporary Islamophobia can be traced to multiple causes. I think one of the most salient of these is the fact that Islam represents a particular worldview and a way of life which is fundamentally opposed in several crucial ways to liberalism, to consumerism, and obviously to capitalism. And of course, ironically and lamentably, the Islamic worldview and system have nowhere been in existence in their full or proper form for at least two centuries now. Yet the West regards these as a threat and a challenge to, you know, the dominance of the West or Western ideology. To add to this, there are certain powerful Western forces like the United States, which seem to need an enemy to justify its global hegemony and its neo imperialist designs. After the collapse of the Soviet Union, it seems to have conjured up Islam as its new opponent to serve this role. And this has been facilitated by the obvious fact that today, with the decline of communism, the only potent challenge that neo-imperialism and capitalism face is, in fact, from Islam, from this religious tradition, from its worldview, from its belief system. Yet another factor fueling the Islamophobic rage in certain countries is the alternative posed to modern secularism by the Islamic moral code and its growing popularity among non-Muslims, particularly non-Muslim women in the Western world, and also its revival among Muslims in many countries, particularly the youth in Muslim countries. And then to add to this is the issue of the strong relations between the West, particularly America and Israel. In America, Jewish Zionist forces enjoy considerable economic and political clout, and Israel itself, which is at the forefront of global Islamophobia, given its expansionist designs in the Middle East, serves in fact as a major tool for American imperialism and for keeping the Arab world under American control. In this context, the crucial question to ask ourselves is how Islamophobia, being so aggressively pursued and promoted by powerful forces today, can be effectively responded to. Well, to be honest, serious obstacles limit the chances of meaningful conciliations. And I don't mean to sound pessimistic. But nevertheless, let's take a very superficial overview of some of these obstacles. I think the first would be denial. Denial is a major complicating factor. Some in the West, speaking in an Australian context, some in Australia as well, deny that Islamophobia exists or that anti-Western sentiment is related to the West's unjustified militarism, particularly the United States, and also their support of oppression and dictatorships within the Muslim world. Instead, they seem to claim that Muslims hate the West for its freedom and democracy, which obviously to most Muslims is quite absurd. We would very much like a bit of that freedom and democracy. But the overwhelming majority of Muslims, incidentally, which represents more than 1.5 billion people on earth, oppose a lot of these attacks on civilians that have been used as a calling card to justify this anti-Islamic sentiment. Most Muslims support the application of Islamic law in their countries that preclude all those negative associations. Most Muslims favor democratic governance. Most Muslims see value in openness to global exchange. So, with respect to the denial that this unjustified Islamophobia exists within the West, it seems to present the first obstacle in engaging in a meaningful dialogue with our compatriots in the West. Another impediment is over and above the misunderstanding associated with Islam and what Muslims truly feel, is the condescending attitude towards others within the West, which eliminates the prospects of building relationships of trust that I think are necessary precursor for any fruitful engagement. Muslims who speak of, for example, Australia as a Sikh culture contribute to the reinforcement of this mistrust. And similarly, Australians who see Australian Muslims as foreigners also reinforce Muslims' fear of exclusion. So these condescending attitudes on both ends, and I think particularly, you know, from the non-Muslim end, at least in my experience within Australia, is another serious impediment. The media is often the venue for transmitting intolerant speech, often promoting stereotypes that feed prejudice. The media should not be censored on account of having some bad players, I don't think. However, media personnel should be educated so that all false and unsubstantiated and out of context coverage is replaced by treatment based on sourced facts, balanced reporting. And besides the media, academia can also benefit from such reform. Scholars are entrusted with educating the public about complex issues. When they choose instead to justify the acts of their preferred political, ideological, and for that matter, even religious leaders, then they betray the very function of knowledge production with which society has entrusted them. And given our, academic audience today, it's something that needs to be seriously discussed within the corridors of academia. The degree to which academia has prostituted itself to the imperial, enterprises of, unfortunately, multinational corporations that dictate government policy. The other impediment is the liberal entertainment industry, which tends to reinforce very negative stereotypes about Muslims, about Islam, the religion, and also political groups. The negative labeling of Muslims is usually intended to stigmatize, to disparage, to humiliate, for the purpose, again, of control, social control, political control. Then we have our opinion leaders also who share some blame. There are all sorts of talk show hosts, diverse religious leaders, so-called, who may have a vested interest in all this harsh rhetoric. But they tend to exude this extremist speech, and it may be very effective in rallying support for their vested, agendas. And extremists have no incentive to change unless their ways are open and clearly repudiated. And we've noticed that when they are challenged by mainstream leaders, they tend to tone down their rhetoric. For example, I've seen talk show hosts who've even apologized in public when their divisive speech began to threaten their financial support base, for example. But in general, such repudiation is rare, and that is sad, and in Australia particularly. And thus, this type of divisive dialogue, these divisive opinion leaders shoulder tremendous responsibility for promoting and provoking mutually reinforced, cycles of Islamophobia and anti-Islamic sentiment. So the question is, what do we do? This is a tremendous challenge we face. Well, achieving conciliation seems to be possible only by the group with the highest stake in this endeavor. Speaking from an Australian context, Australian Muslims have the greatest potential of becoming the catalyst for meaningful dialogue and conciliation because they are both Muslim and Australian. So while resisting marginalization, Australian Muslims should fight extremist thought by engaging others constructively, striving to build on the great values of Islam and also the very many common values we share with our Australian compatriots. I'm pleased to say that Australian Muslims are attempting to meet this challenge through their work, their personal lives, and this evening is a very good case in point. The bridges that are being built now and the degree of intelligent dialogue and maturity of understanding has tremendously positive consequences, not just here and now, but to everyone that we subsequently come into contact with after this evening. I must also stress the importance of the broad Australian community developing a deeper understanding of Islam. to enable it to be in a stronger and more informed position to challenge Islamophobia. So Australian people have to educate themselves about the kaleidoscope of people that live within their lands and within their neighborhood. It'll do nothing but enrich their own understanding of the diverse human world in which we live. Now, my concluding advice to my fellow Australian Muslims in meeting the challenge of Islamophobia is, first, introduce yourself to your neighbors. This is something each and every one of us can do. And if each and every one of us does this, well, that is that many people who have been won over to the side of reason and decency. Second, we need to donate well-written books, you know, CDs and the like about Islam to local schools and public libraries as well. Australian Muslims also must register and vote and select those who would become catalysts and facilitators of this more mature civil interaction between the diverse communities of Australia. We also need to attend school board meetings, council meetings. It's absolutely imperative that we become more active within our community, our neighborhoods. Also, we need to put together, for example, local Ramadan or Hajj displays at our local schools or libraries, for example. We need to also have displays on the commonalities between our religions, particularly Judaism and Christianity. And here is really where the greatest opportunity lies for practicing Muslims, identifying and celebrating the commonality of our religious traditions. Also, we need to submit opinion pieces to our local newspapers about issues of all sorts of local importance. We need to become a little more conspicuous in the most positive way. We also need to invite our local officials and even the public to our masjids. We need to have more open houses, introduce them to our beautiful religion, our very rich culture, diverse culture. We also have to host public events, open days, at community centers, for example. We need to get ourselves and our local Muslim community involved in every local issue, from fun walks, you know, to raise funds for the disadvantaged, to clean-up campaigns. The list is innumerous. We also need to arrange for local and national officials to speak about community issues at our local masjids. Invite them to our masjids. Invite our MPs, our police chiefs, our mayors, our councillors. If each of us light our little candles, the darkness will be very quickly dispelled. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala declares, Udu'u ila sabili rabbik bil hikmati wal maw'idhati al hasana. That invite to the way of your Lord with wisdom and sound counsel. Thank you very much. Wa akhiru da'wana anil hamdulillahi rabbil alamin.